Hello, and welcome to another weekly edition of Popcorn Optional, a movie podcast where we talk all things movies. My name's Cameron Salina, and I'm joined by my co-hosts Jake Brown and Trevor Allison. Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
We are here to review the critically acclaimed box office monster Black Panther that is just destroying all kinds of records, sweeping the nation, doing all sorts of wonderful things. Before we get to that, though, we're going to do a little bit of honorable mentions, and we got a trailer that we got to talk really quick, which is the Incredibles 2 trailer, which seems to hint that this movie is a lot more of Elastigirl's movie than Mr. Incredibles' movie. What did you guys think of the trailer?
Yeah, it's a pretty good trailer, you know? I think this movie's probably like 5 years too late, but as a fan of the original Incredibles, you know, I'm cool with it, and I like that they're going in kind of a totally different direction, so I'm down.
Yeah, I forgot to watch the trailer, even though I've been not doing anything for the past couple minutes while we waited for this podcast to start. So I do agree, without seeing the trailer, that this movie is 5 years too late. I'm not sure why they waited so long, unless they just couldn't get a story they liked. And I think it makes a lot of sense, especially if they're going to try to extend this franchise to focus it more on the kids than the parents.
Jake, as somebody who... this was pretty high on your list of Pixar movies, right?
Yeah, I think this was probably top five for me.
So, is there anything about this movie that makes you nervous, that makes you think, like, this isn't going to live up to what you probably have as very high expectations for this movie?
I think my big worry is that, I mean, hold on, let me look up really quick of when the original Incredibles came out. Came out in 2004. So we're over 14 years apart from when the first one came out, which is ridiculous. But also, it's just like Pixar is a very different company now. And that makes me have some worry. I wasn't a huge fan of Coco. I love Inside Out, but they've kind of turned more into the typical Hollywood studio of like profits and sequels over original property, which is what they were known for. So I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. But I have my concerns.
Alrighty. Well, the trailer looks good. It's an exciting thing. There was, I think it's like 11 years between Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3. I'm curious what the gap between Finding Dory... I think Finding Dory's was 14 years between Finding Dory and Finding Nemo. So apparently this is a Pixar thing. That. Just release movies way after they... Yeah, 13 years between those two. Way after. I'll be curious if all of a sudden there becomes like an incredible shared universe. You get a Frozone movie, a Dash movie. You start getting all these different things leading up to one climactic battle with somebody whose name rhymes with Thanos. I don't know. This is a bad joke. I'm going to stop it there because...
What if 50 years from now we find out that the unified theory of Pixar is real and they've been building for multiple decades to a massive mega film?
I actually think that that's a pretty great idea.
I'm down.
It seems likely.
I'll say, do you guys know, I know the unified theory of Pixar thing, that's like 4 or 5 years old by now. I wonder if that guy has updated that with the new films that they've been putting out.
He's coming out with a book soon, I know that. I don't know if he has one that involves like Coco or anything like that. Finding Dory is kind of easy to throw in there. Inside Out's very
easy. Inside Out, easy.
Mm-hmm. The old get a book deal from a blog post situation. Classic.
Yes.
That is one blog post. I tip my hat to you, sir.
Did you guys see the biggest trailer to come out this week, though?
Oh, gosh. No, I'm going to guess no.
Have you guys seen the return of the Karate Kid with Cobra Kai? Golly, this is terrible.
Okay, wait, is this a real remake? Movie or is it
no,
a joke?
It's a real movie that's like 30 years later, same people, and the Cobra Kai guy has reopened the Cobra Kai school, and It looks really bad.
Wait,
it looks like a CW series.
Has there ever been a situation in which a sequel came out after a reboot of the original?
Ooh, I don't know.
Like a sequel to the original film comes out after a reboot to the original film or a remake.
I would argue that the Alien films are somewhat in that vein.
Yeah, maybe.
What was the other one? I had another one in mind just now.
Sort of. I mean, Alien versus Predator wasn't so much like a sequel as it was like a bastardization of the intellectual property.
Right. Guys, this is a YouTube movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's why it looks
YouTube
so bad.
Red.
Mm. Like 10 people's going to watch that.
I'm honestly curious. I wish that people would release like numbers for things like that. Like I wish the big thing that came out this week was that 5 million people had watched what's it called? Cloverfield Paradox in the first weekend.
That's a lot.
Or in the first 7 days, which is, you know, if you do some simple math, the average movie ticket's around $9 right now. So that's about $45 million for the first week. Not bad, but you also have to factor out that some of those people probably wouldn't go see the movie if it wasn't so easily accessible. I just wish that streaming services would release numbers on things like that so that we kind of had a ballpark of how they're actually stacking up. Like, I know that Netflix says that Bright did 11 million in its first 3 days, but
I don't think they never will. They'll never release it.
Yeah. I would just love to know how many people binge watch The Office every year. That's what I want to know.
All right. So 100 this
million.
Is,
100 million.
I've been doing, so apparently Cobra Kai is a TV show. That's what the Wikipedia entry says, that it's going to be 10 half hour episodes.
I hate it.
I mean, all this shows me is that Ralph Macchio and Billy Zabka aren't doing anything.
Yeah.
I mean, ever since they were recurring characters on How I Met Your Mother for some reason,
what?
They haven't been too busy.
Really?
Yeah, Barney has an obsession with Billy Zabka. He thinks Billy Zabka is the good guy that you should be rooting for, and the Cobra Kai's are like the good guys, and that this random kid from New Jersey is the bad guy. He also thinks Terminator is the good guy. It's actually a pretty funny bit, but it's a long joke that they pull out over the whole series.
All that to say, How I Met Your Mother was a victim of its own success in so many ways.
I can't watch that show. I can't do it. I don't know why.
I'm with you.
I weirdly can't do laugh track with something that's made like after the 90s. Like I can watch Friends, no problem. But for some reason, if there's a laugh track in a modern show, I hate it. I have no idea.
It was the first 5-6 seasons were fun, and then it.
I think you're being generous. 5 or 6. I think it's like 3 or 4, and then after that, it takes a sharp turn. If the show had been like 4 or 5 seasons, it would have been great. What's interesting is that Greta Gerwig, who directed Lady Bird this year, was originally set to be a showrunner on an adaption starring Greta Gerwig of How I Met Your Father.
Oh, God.
Right. Didn't get picked up.
Yep. Yeah. And didn't get picked up. There's a pilot out there somewhere.
How that doesn't get picked up, but Young Sheldon does, I don't understand. It's the same show.
For some reason, I thought you were about to say that Greta Gerwig was going to be the showrunner on Cobra Kai. And I was like, whoa.
Oh, gosh.
Hold on.
More interested. Currently
that
more
is
interested.
A series I would watch. What if they got Jaden Smith to do a crossover into the Cobra Kai series?
Hey, as long as his new album could be some part of the soundtrack or score, I would maybe check that out.
Is it good?
It's surprisingly a good album. His new album is lyrically better than the new Eminem album. Shocking.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's
sentences you never thought would be muttered.
Right? When I listened to it, I was like, ha, Jaden Smith's new album. This is going to be so, oh, I like this. Oh, this is good.
That's called the Carly Rae Jepsen effect.
Oh my gosh. Who's what's his name? The guy that wrote Bright.
David Ayer.
David Ayers?
No, David Ayer directed. Max
Landis.
He also wrote Chronicle.
Oh, yeah. Max Landis, yeah.
Max Landis. Did you guys ever see that he wrote like a 200-page like script thing about like the genius of Carly Rae Jepsen?
Of course he did. That's probably the best thing he's ever written.
Well, Chronicle's pretty good. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
Chronicle is pretty
good. I don't know if it's a well-written movie. I think it's a surprising movie.
I'll give you that. That's a fair concession.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for conceding.
But now that we... You're welcome. And in honor of being Mensch-like and conceding... Wow, that sounds really weird. I just call myself Mensch-like. That's not Mensch-like.
Mm.
But these people are Mensch-like. So let's go ahead and do a segment of Honorable Mensches. For those of you guys who don't know, Honorable Mensches is a segment that we do... We try and do once a month. But it's been a while since we've done a Honorable Mensches. The big thing about Honorable Mensches is we are trying to find actors, directors, actresses, writers, cinematographers, people who, if all you knew about a movie was that they were a part of the movie, would that be enough to make you want to go see it? So, for example, if all you knew about a movie was that Steven Spielberg was directing the movie, is that enough to make you want to go see the movie by itself? You don't know anything about the plot, don't know any actors, actresses that are in it, you just know that Steven Spielberg is directing. Are you interested? We must unanimously vote them in, which means that all three of us must say, yes, I would go see that movie just based on that person alone. And they must have been in or worked on something to the effect of 5 different films or pieces of work. So we have people like Steven Spielberg, Steve Carell, Meryl Streep, Aaron Sorkin, Andy Serkis, J.J. Abrams, Michael B. Jordan. We have a ton of people in this field, but we also have some people that we've denied: Harrison Ford, Amy Adams, Guillermo del Toro, Allison Janney, that just were close but didn't make it. So tonight we are going to do another round of Honorable Mensches. Jake, let's start off with your nomination for Honorable Mensch.
Guys, this is the one I texted you about that you...
Yeah, let's give some background to this.
Oh, man.
You have no idea what's about to happen. And honestly, you're probably going to say no, but I just really wanted to surprise you guys.
Let's give some background to this. Jake texted us about 2 weeks ago and just out of nowhere and was like, guys, I have a nomination. And then didn't say anything else other than it would be shocking and surprise us, and has left us waiting for 2 weeks. So the hype has been like, I legitimately last week during the Phantom Thread show notes just put it in there because I was like, I just have to know. And so now that we are here and it's bubbling to the surface, Jake's surprising nomination is here. Jake, who is it?
Man, you just really built this up. This is super going to let the listener down.
Because it's built up in my head. It is, like, I'm expecting this person to be, like, Michael B. Jordan, to name somebody that is that level of what I'm
Michael
expecting.
B. Jordan's already in, but yes.
I know, I'm just saying.
So this is someone whose work I went on a little binge of a couple weeks ago, and I was just like, man, this person is so talented. He is a English actor, comedian, and screenwriter. And some would recognize him from his, I would say, groundbreaking work, as Mr. Bean, and that is Rowan Atkinson. He's one of the funniest people. Surprise.
You mean Mr. Bean?
I don't know.
Like Rat Race Mr. Bean?
Yeah.
How did you not mention Zazu in your
He is
intro?
Also the voice of Zazu.
Oh my gosh. After all of the hype and buildup, it is Rowan Atkinson.
Dude, I'm just saying, if you haven't watched his like BBC specials or his like just physical comedy stuff, he is one of the best physical comedians ever.
Johnny English.
The Mr. Bean stuff is, it's truly great on a different level than a lot of other things. The problem with Rowan Atkinson is that he was born 80 years too late.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's a silent film actor is what he
absolutely
is. He's the Charlie Chaplin of this generation and a generation that has no time for Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen him in anything besides Johnny English and Mr. Bean.
Well, you haven't seen Rat Race?
Let me just encourage you.
It's been too long
to watch some of his stuff on YouTube, because a lot of his old stand-up physical comedy stuff is on YouTube now, and oh my gosh, it's so funny. You can say no. I'm just wanting to bring it to the light of Rowan Atkinson is amazing.
Okay, I'm gonna say I respect Rowan Atkinson and I think he's great, but I'm gonna say no, which doesn't put him in bad company. Really, he's in the Allison Janney category.
And Harrison,
yeah,
Ford.
He's in the Allison Janney character. I know, Jake. I'm sorry. He's in the Allison Janney category for me as well, as like somebody that I love, but I wouldn't go see a movie just because they were in it.
Okay,
like if they did. You know, Alex Cross, played by Rowan Atkinson.
Okay, wait, no, that's a movie I would go see. No. Alex Cross starring Rowan Atkinson. I'm in for that movie, 100%. Have Rowan Atkinson play the next James Bond.
Rowan Atkinson should have been the new Jack Reacher. Sorry, John Krasinski.
Oh my gosh.
But that would have been amazing. Okay.
You know,
Rowan Atkinson. I'm just trying to bring awareness to people that deserve awareness.
I know, Jake, it's a good pick, and you are right. It was somebody that we never would have guessed. It's a very shocking pick. Yeah, I'm sorry, Rowan Atkinson, but not an honorable mention.
Well, he's also kind of in that Guillermo del Toro category of like, no one does what he does.
Right. There needs to be a category for like, the people that we wish we could nominate in, but like just aren't there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if it was I don't know, we'll come up with something. It's like
almost Wes Anderson.
The honorable category. Funny British guys.
When you first said British, I thought you were going with Ricky Gervais. And I was like,
I thought it was Stephen Merchant. So along those same lines.
Okay. Well, three wildly different guesses for that same thing. But man, that is I will give it to you, Jake. That is an out there. That is an out there pick.
Boom.
Trevor, what is your nomination this week for honorable mentions?
All right. Mine is someone who is just a total hit maker. Everything he does a success, and it's Jerry Bruckheimer. No, I'm kidding.
Oh my gosh. I was about to get shut down so quick.
Oh no. I'm going to steal one from Jake's realm, cause I'm kind of running dry on ideas. And, my nominee is maybe the second best living cinematographer, Emmanuel Lubezki, better known as Chivo.
Yep. He's in. Put him in.
If only for what he did in Children of Men and Gravity.
Revenant.
Yeah. Just it's on a different level what he's able to do.
So Jake, you're in, right?
Duh. The dude defines trends in cinematography.
Okay. That's a good way. Okay. Yeah, cool. I'm in. He's good. Yeah, I think that
if only he could beat Terrence Malick over the head when they go to the editing room.
Right. Wouldn't that be
Did
great?
You see there was a trailer released today for a movie starring Javier Bardem. I think it's actually a short film. But it is for a short film based off of footage cut from a film that Terrence Malick did of all of these Javier Bardem scenes. It's supposed to be like a 20-minute short film.
You could make a bunch of good short films from people who have been cut entirely from Terrence Malick films.
It cracks me up that he shoots so much footage that you can make spin-off side films off of that footage alone.
You could also turn a Terrence Malick film into a pretty good film just by cutting down the theatrical version.
Yeah. The way that guy makes a movie is so weird. Of just like, I'm just going to call people and shoot nonsense until it kind of makes sense.
Where does the money come from? I don't understand.
Look, he made Thin Red Line, and ever since then, the money just comes from thin air.
Thin Red Line isn't that good.
Ooh, hot take.
It's not that good.
Mm.
If a movie is beautiful but you still can't stay awake, it doesn't mean it's that good.
But Trevor, it's the most this evil, this darkness. Where's it come from? It's got the best like Jim Caviezel line you could ever think of.
I'm not Terrence Malick gets great performances out of people. That's not his problem.
Right. My favorite thing about Terrence Malick is that he did like one film a decade. Like he did a film in 73, 78, didn't do a film for 20 years till 1998. Then he did a film in 2005, 2011. And then he's just like blurted out like 2012, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018. Like he's just throwing films out there now. Tree of Life came out and he was just like, yeah, everything.
Whoa, I did not realize he was that old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
74.
Basically, the last like 8 years, he's just been shooting a ton of crap in different places around Texas with famous people.
Yes.
And then turning it into a story.
Digital, yeah. Man. That's what digital does. Gives you the freedom to shoot.
Maybe that's what he was waiting for.
Yeah.
He finally could afford a Red camera, and then he was like, okay, now I'm just going to go film everything.
I'm not going to lie.
I have no shortage of negative opinions about Terrence Malick.
Have you seen Tree of Life?
I've not seen Tree of Life. I just couldn't.
I have a feeling that your review of Tree of Life would involve the phrase most pretentious movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. See, my eyeballs saw Tree of Life, but my brain didn't.
That's fair. My comparison for Tree of Life was always like, if a normal movie is like a novel or a book, Tree of Life is like a poem. You can't read it the same way. You can't look at it. Like it's a completely different style of filmmaking.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
I'll put that on the list.
And it makes no sense.
Yes, makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But I loved it. And I say that with a question mark at the very end for a reason.
I mean, that's avant-garde, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's not as like avant-garde as like somebody running on a beach in slow motion for 30 minutes, which is a short film that my film professor in New York once showed us. It's just a teenage boy running on a beach for 30 minutes in slow motion.
Oh, I hate that. I hate that.
Yes.
So much.
Yeah. So
that's the bottom of the medium.
Yes. Yes. Okay. All right.
Chivo, welcome to the party.
Yay. Chivo. Emmanuel Lubezki, welcome to the Honorable Mentions. Okay.
Drum roll, please.
Alrighty. That was actually a pretty good drum roll.
That was cymbals. I was doing the cymbal part of the percussion section.
I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was thought it was well done.
I thought that was a garage band.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Here we go. Here we go. Yeah. Okay. This is a director who has made a lot of really good things. He is somebody who I think has changed a lot of, I think every time he puts out a movie, it's like that buzz movie that everybody's talking about for better or for worse. Even his like bad movies have been movies that people have talked about. I haven't been a huge fan. I wasn't a huge fan of his last movie, but everything up until that was a huge fan. And that is David Fincher.
Hmm.
Yes. I'm in on Fincher.
Yeah, Fincher is, in my opinion, currently on my Mount Rushmore of directors. Mm. So, absolutely. The dude has made some of the best films of all time, in my opinion. So,
yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Gone Girl, but like Social Network, Zodiac, Fight Club, The Game, Seven, even like Panic Room has its bright parts. He's a pretty amazing guy with what he's done. And
Panic Room is a lot better than it should be.
Yes. And if he ends up getting World War Z 2 off the ground, that's the only thing that could possibly make me excited about that movie. I mean, it's him or bust.
What he did, what he did with The Social Network, which is the all-time robbery of winning Best Picture. It's a better movie than The King's Speech all the way around.
That's a conversation for another friend.
Also true.
But yeah, I mean, he's great. He takes these stories and he explores these, like, I don't know. It's like these, like, deep desires of his characters. Like these, it's like showing us, it almost like, I feel like his goal is to show you that, like, everyone is capable of doing something bad.
Yeah.
Not that his movies are all depressing or anything, but I feel like that's kind of what he does.
You know, now that you say that, maybe he would be the perfect choice to direct the Joaquin Phoenix Joker film.
Starring Rowan Atkinson.
As
the Joker.
As Batman, actually, and the Joker. He's playing both roles.
Guys, that'd be amazing. Think about
I'm 100% in on that movie.
Mr. Beans is the Joker.
Yeah. Just on the sheer, like, what the heck factor.
Would he be better than Jared Leto?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. 100. Well, nothing could be worse than Jared Leto. That's the thing. Like, you could literally put Michael Bay playing the Joker, and it would be better than Jared Leto's the Joker.
That's probably true.
Mark Hamill doing the voice in the studio.
With no person on screen.
Just footage.
in a very, like, psychological way, that would be a great thing. Like, if he was just in the in Batman's head, and it was just Mark Hamill's, like, voice torturing him. That's actually... I'm in on that.
We need to delete that from this podcast and actually...
We just wrote a movie.
Write a treatment of that.
Did you guys see that Mark Hamill announced the other day that Watchmen is one of his favorite films of all time?
Oh,
Zack Snyder's Watchmen?
Listen,
Mark.
Watchmen is not that bad.
Trevor.
It's not that bad.
Did you guys hear the news that apparently Zack Snyder didn't just, like, resign from personal matters from Justice League, but he got fired because... He, like, couldn't write the script, and the first cut was literally, quote, unwatchable.
Yeah. Multiple people, quote, unquote, said unwatchable.
Poor guy.
He was supposedly fired about 2 months before it actually came out.
Yeah.
Like, not before the movie came out, before the news of him stepping down or whatever came out.
The whole the thing didn't become incredibly watchable.
I was going to say, you know what? Honestly, after seeing it, not surprised. Like,
every time I think about that movie, I think stylized action shot, Joss Whedon punchline over and over again.
Gal Gadot.
I think Henry Cavill's mustache.
Golly, that mustache.
Which is even worse when you watch people online who have done better versions of removing that mustache than the actual movie.
Did you see the guy who made an AI program that did it by itself?
Yes.
And it was better than... I loved
it
the...
It looked amazing.
The Deadpool joke in the trailer. Did you guys hear that?
Oh, man. That was so good.
So good. Well, speaking of superheroes...
Black
Cameron,
Panther?
I just, like, threw you an alley-oop and you super hesitated on that one.
I was
looking to still close out honorable mentions, you know. I was still in that realm. We've chased a lot of rabbits, as I like to say tonight. But welcome Emmanuel Lubezki and David Fincher to the honorable mentions. Rowan Atkinson, we're sorry. We love you. But it's just close. Let's face it, though. You are way more talented than any of us hosting this podcast. And so if you want to, we will gladly let you punch each of us in the face if you happen to listen to this and hear that.
Did we
seem fair, guys?
Did we all agree on this? Was this like a pre-agreed upon?
Yes.
You know,
if they get denied, they get to at least punch us in the face if they want it.
It's all about the web traffic.
I'll do it. I'm down.
Guys, can you imagine how many listeners we would get if podcasters deny Rowan Atkinson from something and then get punched in the face by him? We would be hitting the millions of listeners.
That's the only reason I do this. It's not for the fame or the money. It's to get punched in the face by celebrities.
I'm still waiting for Amy Adams to punch me in the face.
This took a weird turn.
This took a really weird turn. I literally was just looking at the people denied, right, and I was like, Amy Adams. But Harrison Ford did punch Ryan Gosling in the face, so that could happen.
Well, there you go. Let's move on to our review, which is of this movie, which is the exact opposite of the movie we reviewed last week.
Yes. Black Panther is the exact opposite of Phantom Thread. That's our review. We'll see you guys next week. No, but this week we're reviewing Black Panther, the new film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the 18th movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, directed by Ryan Coogler, starring Chadwick Boseman, Michael B. Jordan, Lupita Nyong'o, Danai Gurira, Martin Freeman, Daniel Kaluuya, Letitia Wright, Winston Duke, Angela Bassett, Forrest Whitaker, Andy Serkis. I mean, that cast is just insane. And this movie is doing incredible things. It grossed $192 million in its opening weekend, which is the second highest grossing Marvel movie of all time, fifth most all time behind Star Wars, Episode 7 and 8, Jurassic World, and Avengers. And the projected four-day total puts the movie at the third, possibly the second highest grossing four-day total of all time behind Star Wars 7, Star Wars 8. It's at 235 right now projected. If it can get up to 242, it'll surpass Star Wars Episode 8, which, let's be honest, there's a good chance that this movie just keeps blowing past things. And so I'd be willing to bet this becomes the second highest four-day total of all time, which is just incredible. Guys, general thoughts on Black Panther?
Yeah, I mean, this film is, it's just an incredible spectacle. I mean, the production design, the art direction is just off the charts. The world building here is amazing. Like, the entire cast, this cast gives incredible performances. And honestly, like, Chad's performance of T'Challa / Black Panther kind of gets lost in the amazingness of the rest of this cast, which is a compliment, not a criticism. Ryan Coogler proves he's one of the best directors in Hollywood, especially one of the best up-and-comers. This is definitely the most unique Marvel movie yet. Might even be the best Marvel movie so far. And also, I just want to bring up that Marvel has had three home runs in a row with Spider-Man Homecoming, Thor Ragnarok, this, and maybe even four, Guardians 2, hot take. But what I loved most about this movie is that they just like fully let Ryan Coogler do his thing. This movie doesn't pull any punches, and it shines because of it. And Wakanda forever. That's all I have to say.
I had a joke with my wife about the amount of times that Wakanda forever would be said on this podcast. So there's one.
Okay. Awesome.
I mean, hot dang, what a movie. This is, I agree with a lot of what Jake said. This like, I had, there was absurd hype surrounding this movie, and it completely met the hype. This movie is 2 hours and 14 minutes long, and it could have been another 30 probably.
Should have been.
There's more stuff that could have happened to build this out, and I wouldn't have minded at all. The cinematography by Rachel Morrison, the costume design by Ruthie Carter, the production design by Hannah Beechler, all Oscar-worthy performances, especially the production design. What a beautiful world that was designed and built for this. And props to the art department and the CGI special effects team for making all of these things happen on a soundstage in Atlanta. What was able to happen for this film to be, I mean, in addition to, of course, the great writing, the great directing from Ryan Coogler, who's going to be an honorable mention if he just go ahead and make two more movies.
Amen.
And the great cast, Michael B. Jordan is just phenomenal. Andy Serkis is astounding in this.
And he's not even CGI'd.
Amazing. I know, right? He's actually acting.
Well, he has a CGI so good arm, so never mind.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Spoiler.
He just can't quit.
It's in his contract. I have to have some part of my body be CGI.
It's actually a CGI Andy Serkis playing Andy Serkis.
he's just not comfortable if he's not in the motion capture suit. Okay. But yeah, I'll let you go, Cam. But yeah, I just loved this movie. I have a lot to say because it's just so great.
Okay, I like this movie quite a bit. I think there's a lot of really good things. The cast is fantastic. We've gone ahead and talked about our love of Michael B. Jordan in this podcast multiple times. He is the future of cinema. If he is in one movie every single weekend, I will go see that movie and be happy about it because he's just a star. Ryan Coogler has directed two of my favorite movies the years that they came out, between Creed and Fruitvale Station. The cast in this is crazy. The fact that I cared more about what happened to Letitia Wright's Shuri than any other character says quite a bit. She's T'Challa's little sister, and she's just incredible. They also managed to work in a "what are those" joke, which is another just amazing piece of cinema that we should all be very happy about. There's a lot of things to love about this film. I have a couple problems with this film, and I'm probably the only one on the podcast that does. There's a couple things that felt a little clunky to me at parts, and I think I'm with you guys, though. I think that I wish... One of my biggest problems with this is that I just wish that there was more. There's so... Like, this is such a rich, in-depth world where there's so many things going on. You're introducing a whole new country, whole new pieces of technology to us. You're introducing worlds of characters. And as much as I loved all of that, I just wanted it to go on because there was just... There's so many different places to go with this that... I just wanted more, and I wish that there was more. We'll get into this in spoilers. I wish there was more of certain characters that we'll never get in the future. If you ask me, the two of the three best characters in this, we will not see in the future, which is very sad. But there's a lot to like about this film. It's a, I don't know if risky is the right word, but it's a film that definitely takes chances. And I think all of those chances are pretty big home runs.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am not like just fanboying out about this movie. I have some issues with it as well, which we'll talk about. But okay. I mean, I think I do. I stand by my point of this being, I think, definitely the most unique and maybe the best Marvel movie to date.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it might be the best as well.
Let's talk about really quick before we get to spoilers. I think my favorite part about this film, and it's probably the most talked about piece of this film, is the cultural impact of this film. Now, that being said, we are three white males in their late 20s sitting at home talking about this movie. But I think it's just such a fascinating thing to see the cultural impact that this film is having, in the sense of there are kids, there are people out there who are getting to see representation that they've never seen before on the big screen. And that's incredible. That's something that, like, no matter what we say on this podcast tonight, it does not take away from that whatsoever, because that is the best. That is one of the most amazing parts of this movie, is that I've seen countless tweets about, like, kids walking up to the poster and being like, "Look, that one's me," or like, "I get to be that one." Or like, you know, as a kid, you used to play that game. And just the fact that there are, you know, millions of people out there now that get to have that sort of representation is fascinating. I mean, it's not fascinating. It's amazing. It's mind blowing. I'm happy. It's sad that it's taken so long, but I'm happy that it gets to happen now. And I'm happy that there are people out there that now have that same representation, because that's just so cool to think that we are at a place where that's finally happening.
Yeah. I think it's been weird to watch the cultural reaction of this because of, like, all of the trolls and the way that, like, opinion-based media is trying to, like, stoke the fire and stuff. And just let's just call it out for what it is. It's like, people are like, "Well, Blade came out and that was the first black superhero," and it's like, okay, like, yes, but also he was like a vampire that was like an outcast from society. This is a king, like the king, right, of a nation that has an incredible people and culture and technology. And I mean, this is
that
the
takes
most
place in Africa with,
yeah,
the
way this
mostly
film
African-American cast. I mean,
yeah, the way this film embraces and respects the tradition of past and current African people is amazing. The incredible women in this film are very welcomed and a huge course correction for Marvel, which was very needed. This was the most diverse theater I've ever been in, and also probably one of the most fun theater experiences I've had in a long time. My theater was eating this film up, and the kids that were in this theater were just like so pumped up after the movie. And like you said, Cameron, they were like, I want to be T'Challa. I want to be. And it was just really cool to really, really cool to see that. This is the Wonder Woman moment of 2018, in my opinion.
Right. And to be fair to like the Blade films, like those films are directed by three white males, Stephen Norrington, Guillermo del Toro, and David S. Goyer, with a mostly white cast set in America. So it's like, yes, it was the first black superhero film, but it's not the same. Like there's a completely different realm of film that we are dealing with here than we were dealing with in Blade.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, this is, I mean, I don't, I mean, you guys can, I mean, have said a lot of the things I wanted to say on this. I think the representation of women in this is super important, especially for where Marvel has been as a universe. I kind of thought about that as the little Marvel Studios intro thing flashes up there and all the characters after character. And it's like, yeah, there's not very many women here involved. And I hope that some of these can kind of carry over into Infinity War, the rest of the universe, that kind of thing. This was an incredibly diverse theater experience for me as well. People ranging in age from 5 to 80, multiple different races, ethnicities. It just really seems to resonate with everyone. And I think that the success of this movie is really important for the future of black filmmakers getting to write and direct their own films. Mm-hmm. which has been happening more and more. We've got Ava DuVernay has been doing her thing, there's a lot more big budget movies with black directors than there were 10 years ago, definitely. But I still think this kind of proves, it also proves that, which something that I feel like is sort of implicit in movies, and it's that white people won't see a movie with mostly black cast. And I think that this movie will kind of dispel that notion.
Yeah.
Right.
I think one other thing to hop off of what you said, Trevor, with the empowering of women and something that Marvel hasn't done well in the past is, really, besides Wonder Woman, who I know isn't Marvel, the only like woman superhero, quote superhero, that we've had is Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson, who does a great job in that role, and then Elizabeth Olsen, who I forget her like quote hero name, but
Scarlet Witch.
Boom. Okay.
There's also Zoe Saldana as Gamora in the Guardians movies.
Right, but I think one thing about those characters is they're sexualized in a way of like with their outfits, but also like the way they fight is like so like, I'm gonna jump on you with my crotch and flip you around, and like Elizabeth Olsen, I'm gonna stand back here with my magical witch powers and I can't be in the thick of it. But this movie is just like, nope, this is how women would dress. This is how they would fight in this situation. She would take off her heel and stab it through a guy's eye. Like,
right.
Just
like Danae Gurira taking off her wig and using it as like a distraction.
Amazing.
To throw at
somebody. Like, amazing. Stuff like that where it's just like, thank you. This is what it would actually be like in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's go ahead and get into spoilers. If you are one of the few people who haven't seen Black Panther yet, based on the numbers that this movie put out, go see it. It's out in theaters. It's well worth your time. I know it sounds long, but it's well worth it. It's a good film. Let's go ahead and get into spoilers, though. And one of the things that I wanted to first talk about was, typically with a Marvel film, there are pitfalls that every single Marvel film falls into. There's a bad villain, like the villain has like a lack of motivation, or is just uninteresting, or is just there and bland, or there's a lack of depth. There's a poor score. There's an unwillingness to kill big characters. There's predictability. There's all these things that Marvel films normally fall into. Where did you guys think this film... Do you guys think this film fell into any of those pitfalls?
Well, it definitely doesn't have a bad villain.
Right. I think that's an easy one that we can talk about in just a second. Michael B. Jordan's Eric Killmonger. But the other ones, what did you guys think about those?
You know, yes and no. I mean, it definitely was predictable in certain areas, not so in others. The score is okay, which I thought was weird considering how amazing the soundtrack is.
The score I felt like was great at times, but lacking at others.
Yeah,
there are times where it mixes hip hop with like African music, and that like when it does that, that's incredible.
The music in the fight scenes was epic, but a lot of other areas it was kind of like, this feels like a temp track that they didn't switch out.
When they dropped out the sound as they were falling through the mine, that was a great choice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cinematography, you know, Trevor, I'm going to have to kind of disagree with you on this one. I thought the cinematography was pretty good when it was good, or pretty great, I guess, when it was good. But when it's bad, it's really bad. Like, some of the fight scenes some of the fight scenes were hard to follow. Like, they were super blurry. I think they should have overcranked the shutter to make the action a little clearer. Some of the CG was pretty rough. I mean, the rhinos and the train the rhinos were bad. And it's disappointing because the production design and art direction are just so good. And Ryan Coogler knows how to direct action. Like, go watch Creed. The guy knows how to move a camera in a scene. And some of the one take stuff and the fight scenes were fantastic in this film. I don't know. And it's a bummer because it's Rachel Morrison, and she's nominated for Mudbound, and she's the first female cinematographer to work on a Marvel film, and she's amazing. But
she's the first female cinematographer on a Marvel film.
Yeah, and I in certain areas it was some of the best cinematography so far this year, and maybe for the whole year. But in other areas, I was like, "Man, this is dark," or "Man, this is blurry." That's just me. I overanalyze that stuff.
There's a couple of the action scenes I will say that where it felt very what's the right phrase? It felt very deliberate or kind of slow, thinking through it, almost they were practicing it, and then they just decided to put that cut into the actual film. There are a couple the one that sticks in my mind is the time when T'Challa fights M'Baku in the first fight at the waterfall. There were a couple shots in there where it was you could tell they were pulling punches and I don't know. I mean, Jake, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it felt like if they had just simply changed the angle at which they shot that, the pacing of it might have felt a little bit quicker or less fake fight-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a way to do it.
I'll agree. I think the waterfall, both of the waterfall fight scenes could have been shot better. I think there's a little bit of confusion there. I loved the fight scene in the casino.
Yes.
Going with that kind of Tony Jaa Onbox style of following everyone around was a lot of fun. And a really good choice, I thought.
And just to quickly piggyback off of that, if you like that scene, Ryan Coogler does a breakdown of it online that you can look up where he breaks down that entire scene beginning to end. That's incredible.
We tweeted about it.
Yeah.
Check that Twitter. I also thought the cinematography during the car chase was really good. I thought that was very well done.
Yeah. As far as the pitfalls, I think that there is layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of depth to this movie, so I don't think that's a problem. We've talked about the score. Yes, there are parts where it's a little predictable. The one thing, my biggest complaint when I talked about was two of my favorite characters in this film are killed in this film. Once again, spoiler, but Andy Serkis is dead at the end of this movie. And Michael B. Jordan's character are both dead at the end of this movie. So as far as the unwillingness to kill big characters, it's definitely not a problem in this film.
They're killing the wrong characters.
It's frustrating. I think that it makes sense for Warmonger to die. The way that it happens, it's frustrating, but it makes sense. I'm pretty sure that Ulysses Klaue died because the Russo brothers didn't have a spot for him in Infinity War.
Yeah.
I think he was just too big of it. I think in part of his contract was like, look, I really only want to do like, I'll do Avengers Age of Ultron, but I really just kind of want to do like one film and be out.
Yeah, because I feel like, I mean, Infinity War is kind of the next logical place for him to show up, I think. You could have done something interesting where the Avengers go to him for help in dealing with Thanos or something like that. And Andy Serkis is great. But yeah, I'm guessing, I would say that there may be some outside factors in addition to story here, because he's probably not cheap.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Cameron. That's my biggest complaint about this movie is like we all complain about how Marvel doesn't have great villains, and we've had like five movies with Loki now, and we don't get any more of Michael B. Jordan as Eric Killmonger, because holy crap, he stole this movie. Like,
yeah,
maybe the best Marvel villain
just like
ever.
He stole the throne.
Slightly like, made me wish that he was playing Black Panther.
I know, like honestly, I kind of wanted him to win, which like is the best kind of villain, one you can really empathize with, because his character, you empathize with him so much. And like, honestly, spoiler, he kind of does win. Like he changes right. the hero forever. And that's what you want from a villain. And
well, like in ways, villain, there are times where I mean, like you understand his motivations of
absolutely.
Like, and that's the most compelling part about him is that you truly understand where he's coming from as a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's compelling.
He's also cool as hell.
Yeah. And I agree with you, Trevor. I understand why they had to kill him off, because that's the only way for T'Challa to fully become Black Panther and learn from his mistakes. Like Killmonger is unredeemable. He's unshakable in his views, which makes him the best superhero villain since Ledger's Joker. Hot take. Ooh, maybe.
Ooh.
Best villain.
I don't know that I don't.
Best villain,
I don't think
villain,
I disagree with
best
that.
Best superhero
like super
villain.
Oof.
Let's be real.
The only one that I would
superhero,
put up against
a superhero film is only as good as its villain. And I can't think of a
Loki is a lot of fun, but he's not even really a villain.
Yeah.
He's
I would
he's,
put
he's
Vulture
more complex
up there.
Than that.
Loki's just confused.
Yeah. I'd put Vulture up there from Spider-Man.
Vulture was good.
Vulture was good, but not on this level.
Yeah, I've talked about my obsession with Spider-Man, so that's another thing.
it's very rare in anything in which the defeat of the villain actively improves the hero.
Yeah.
Right.
That doesn't happen very often.
And a lot of times in Marvel films, the defeat of the villain means a future ally. And in this film, I love that they make him so strong in his beliefs and such an opposite, but also such a equal to Black Panther that like, this is literally the only way this film could end. Because in my mind, I was like, oh, well maybe they'll figure it out. Maybe they'll work together. They can heal him. We've established in this universe that Wakandans can heal basically any wound. But the fact that he, what does he say? He was like, our people on the ships decided to dive into the water because they knew it was better to die than to be in bondage, and then pulls the knife out. I was like, holy crap. My gosh. Like,
yeah. What a line.
Just Michael B. Jordan steals this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the interesting definitely. Thing is, like, some of his views, like, I think the idea of, like, him wanting to give weapons to all of the black people across the world so that they can rise up is a, like, dangerous viewpoint. But from the same time, it's, like, his idea of wanting to share technology is, like, such a, like, yeah, you fully understand that. And you fully understand from the side of, like, he's, like, he's so close to being, like, on the right side of the opinion that it's like I'm so close to being 100% on board with him that it's like that little bit of extra evil turn is just kind of like, yeah, mass genocide's not great. But everything else is like, yeah, your dad was killed. Like, you have as much right to the throne as T'Challa does. All these different things that make this character so compelling that it's like, I think one of the best, you guys are right, like, one of the best parts about this is, like, Ryan Coogler created one of the best villains we've ever seen in a superhero film.
I love that, like, the end of this movie is basically Wakanda being like, yeah, let's do that, but, like, without all the murder.
Like, right.
Yeah.
We don't need all the murder.
Yeah, he's someone who, his flaw is that he cannot separate, like, who he is and has been as a soldier from what his ultimate goals are.
Mm-hmm.
When he talks about, you know, like, thinking like his enemy, that kind of thing, he, like, takes it to the opposite extreme in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that ends up being his downfall.
Yeah. And
yeah,
they use Michael B. Jordan in this film as, like, a lens on society in such a good way. Like, the things this movie addresses, it basically addresses, like, every major cultural issue in America right now from both perspectives, and both right. sides have valid arguments. Like, our gender, racial, and national barriers, this movie tears all of those down from both sides. It takes jabs at politicians. Like, I just love how much of a commentary this film makes on all of society, and how Michael B. Jordan is, like, essentially the funhouse mirror that Ryan Coogler is holding up to us as Americans.
Right. And then, like, even, like, everything about this character is, like, even down to the design of him, like, his markings and scars on his body and what they represent are just so, like, terrifying when you realize, like, when they say, like, what those actually are. You know, it's one for every person that he's killed, and there's, like, probably 1,000 on his body. It's just terrifying.
The physical transformation that Michael Jordan went through for this film is insane.
Yeah.
Like, he looked like a different person.
Yeah. Not to mention, he may have the best line in the entire film when Claw is like, is that mask vibranium? And he's like, nah, I'm just feeling it.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's a pretty great line.
I liked the one when he was like, hey, Auntie. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good one. Angela Bassett.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. There was an interesting, I don't know what the right, not anachronism really, but just the way that he talks and interacts with the people of Wakanda is pretty great.
Yeah. Well, I think it's definitely like a view, like, Jake, you talked about, like, this lens through which to view society on, but it's definitely like, he's a very modern villain in the way that, like, everything that he does and, like, how he talks and all these different things. Tora's like, as much as advanced as Wakanda is, it's still very deeply rooted in tradition. And so it's this commentary on, like, old versus new, and bringing, you know, the past into the present. And, you know, that part was really cool. Like I said, there's layers upon layers within this film that are just, you could just take hours to just break down.
I just love how they casually refer to Martin Freeman as a colonizer. Just so funny.
Wait, can we, let's talk for a quick second about not Martin Freeman's American accent is not bad.
No.
But it is so jarring to see that face not have an accent.
Did anybody else laugh when it was Andy Serkis and Martin Freeman on screen?
Yes.
Who played Gollum and Bilbo having, like, another dialogue with each other?
Yes. I thought the same thing.
Can we also, like, talk about how useless Martin Freeman is in this film? Like, I legitimately believe that the only reason they had those ships leaving with weapons is so they would be like, oh, crap, we need to give Martin Freeman something to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, that kind of makes sense.
It gives a sense of urgency to the whole thing. I think there's a couple reasons. I think that you might be a little bit right, Jake. I also think they didn't want to get too far from the rest of the Marvel universe, and he kind of offers that link. Also, that character is a really important character in the comics.
Yeah.
He's someone who works with Black Panther constantly.
Mm.
So I think that could be a factor as well. But yeah, he did. I wish they had given him a little bit more to do.
I think Trevor's right in that, like, he represented the, like, rest of the Marvel's view in this situation. Like, he was a interpreter for them in this time when, you know, we had seen him in Captain America Civil War, but we hadn't seen him since then. And he was associated with that whole film and everything that went down. And so he's kind of this, like, outsider's perspective on what Wakanda is, because if our only perspective on what Wakanda is to the outside world was through Michael B. Jordan, we'd get a very skewed look at what this country is. But I think Martin Freeman kind of presents this entirely different perspective on what Wakanda means to the modern world than what Killmonger ends up bringing to that side.
Yeah, that's a good point. I personally really liked, like, the smallish stakes of this film compared to the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, yeah. I appreciate that at no point there was a blue beam of light in the sky. I don't think we needed the ships with the weapons at the end thing. That, like I said, that felt like giving Martin Freeman something to do.
I think it makes sense with, like, I think we would have been asking the question of, like, why wasn't Killmonger's plan extrapolated to a bigger extent if we didn't have that part of, like, him actually trying to execute what he had talked about.
Yeah, I was just so much more invested in the family versus Killmonger stuff and, like, the future of the nation that the threat of, like, weapons getting out didn't have enough weight for me to be the climax. Like, anytime we were cutting back to Martin Freeman trying to shoot down the ships, I was like, I don't care. Let's go back to, like, the people we care about fighting for their lives and the future of their nation. Yeah. So
let's just talk about really quickly though, how cool that tech was though, of, like, being able to, like, sit in the car or in the ship and have, like, a 360 view of what was going on around you.
I also love that, like, the person creating all that is a 16-year-old black girl who's on, like, the level of Tony Stark, like, doing stuff is, like, at a higher level than Stark Industries.
I don't know if it's Feige that's come out and said it, but somebody came out and said, like, she is the smartest person in the MCU.
So
yeah, I think it was she's smarter than Feige said Tony. That.
So I am so out of the loop on actual Marvel comics, but I know that there is now a, like, a black girl Iron Man. Is that her?
No.
Okay.
It's somebody else.
I don't think so.
But at some point, I don't remember when, but I'm pretty sure at some point
she becomes Black Panther.
Yes. At some point she does take up the mantle. I don't know if that's in, like, the modern run or somewhere in the past, but she definitely takes up. Which, like, here's the thing. If Chadwick Boseman ever decides, like, yeah, I'm kind of done playing Black Panther, I will fully go see a film where she takes up Black Panther.
Oh yeah. She was awesome.
That would be awesome.
Like, the whole cast, like, the women in this film are, like, between her, Lupita Nyong'o, and Danai Gurira, Danai Gurira in this film is just incredible. She has some very memorable, she has some very funny lines, like the whole, like, don't freeze line, and then, like, he ends up, like, oh, he froze the second he saw her.
Mm-hmm.
Lupita Nyong'o's incredible. Like, this whole cast of women is just incredible. And that's, like, I think that's the very interesting thing for me, is, like, I walk out of this film feeling such a connection to all of those characters, more so, yes, to Killmonger, because Michael B. Jordan's just a gem of a human being that deserves to be celebrated in anything that he's in. But the female cast in this film is just, it knocks it out of the park at every single Angela Bassett's great in this. Like, there's so many ways to celebrate this film and the female cast. That's just incredible.
And just how much, like, this movie doesn't exist without them is,
yeah,
like, I would love to see the men's rights people try and recut this film without all the women in it. It's impossible. It's impossible.
Just like they recut Star Wars.
Exactly.
Females.
It's impossible.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the problems that we had with this film. And the one, like, outside of like them killing some of my favorite characters in the film, the big problem that I ended up having was there's this part that feels very clunky to me, and it's the fact that Denai Gurira's Okoye and Wakabi are like lovers. They're in a relationship. And it just feels like this clunky throw-in to then at the end of the film have him be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't turn on T'Challa because I love Okoye. Did that feel clunky to you guys at all?
I didn't take it as him not turning because of... I took it as like... I didn't think the relationship felt forced. I thought that was like good character development to establish their relationship. But I also think that that was him more realizing that like she cares more about saving Wakanda than he does about like destabilizing it, maybe. That like she is the better warrior. Yeah. She is the better that he knew he wouldn't win.
Right.
And also like clearly he has feelings for her, but the fact that he was like, would you really strike me down? And she was like, for Wakanda in a heartbeat. I think that was like, that was the turning point.
Right.
Yeah. I think I agree with Jake. I didn't take it as he stopped because of his love for her. Although I will say that relationship that could have the same effect if you just portrayed them as like really old friends.
Right.
It didn't necessarily need to be romantic. Not that I have a problem with it per se. It maybe was a little cheesy, but I also kind of feel like with I can't remember what the border protectors, whatever they're called, with that whole situation, I kind of got the feeling that their confidence was so slowly waning anyway. Especially when Killmonger is down in the mine fighting T'Challa and he's not there next to you. I think it has a little bit of a different kind of feel anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily feel like that was too big of an issue. I think it could have been smoother maybe, but not a problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Were there any other problems that you guys had with this film?
I felt like if we were going to add some time to this movie, there should have been a little bit more build up with Killmonger in Wakanda before the fight, the ceremonial fight for whoever's going to be king. And then also I think that, T'Challa being found by the mountain tribe was a little bit too easy. Like if we could have seen T'Challa struggling through the wilderness for a couple minutes, and then having to ask these people who he doesn't get along with for assistance, that kind of thing, instead of just them finding his body and carting it up the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think that if you're going to add like 5 minutes, that's a really good place to add it.
Yeah. I think that's my biggest thing is honestly, you could have made this movie 30 minutes longer and I think it would have just made it better. And that's a very rare thing to say in the film industry. But I think that just kind of speaks to Ryan Coogler and what they were able to do. I mean, that's really my only complaint, minus a few little technical things that for me didn't work, but that's just more personal opinion. I hope that they come out with like a director's cut or something that just has those deleted scenes. Because apparently the first cut was like 4 hours and... honestly, like I would watch that. This could have been two movies.
But I think that was an assembly cut of the film. I don't think that was like a everything they shot cut. I think that was just like, here's the assembly cut.
Yeah. Even if though, like I'm down. Like this could have been two movies. I wanted more of Michael B. Jordan. I wanted more of this world that the world building in this movie is insane. And like, I wanted to spend more time in Wakanda and with these characters.
Right.
Yeah. I think you could do a little more with Killmonger in the first act of the film, maybe. And then also I think that Ulysses Klaue deserved a little bit of a better death. Three bullets to the chest in a junkyard.
Yeah.
I think he deserves something a little more interesting. This is a guy that, I mean, worked with Ultron and survived to tell about it, you know?
Yeah. But is there anything else that you guys want to talk about on this film, or should we go ahead and get to our ratings?
I mean, I feel like Jake kind of touched on this. We didn't talk about Chadwick Boseman enough because the movie was sort of stolen from him by Michael B. Jordan. But I can't imagine you casting someone better for this role than Chadwick Boseman. He is absolutely what this role needs. He's fantastic.
I think
it's interesting to me that we've had a whole Black Panther podcast. We've been talking about this movie specifically now for like 40 minutes. And this is the first time that we've mentioned the title character of the film.
I mean, I will agree with Trevor, like what he does in this character is fantastic. It's a tough character to play because he's so like virtuous and so like he has so much responsibility that he bears so well. Like no other superhero has this amount of responsibility. Like not only is he a superhero, but he is the king of a nation. And I think he plays both sides of that really, really well, and shows the passion that he has for his people and to be a good person, a good leader, and that he understands that his decisions have weight, whereas like a lot of the other characters in the Marvel Universe are kind of like the unassuming person that gets put in a position and they're like, oh well, yeah, I guess I'll be a hero, I'm Paul Rudd, like whatever. Whereas like this guy just like oozes charisma and confidence and just like owns the role and the character. And I don't know who else you would cast besides maybe Michael B. Jordan to be Black Panther.
Yeah,
because he kills it.
He has this, and he's also unique among characters in this universe in that he is intelligent and wise while also constantly second guessing himself, to make sure that he's doing the right thing at all times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling that he's actually concerned about, you know, the collateral damage. Like we talk about, you know, with like the final battle in Avengers, where, you know, buildings are just falling down and all of these things are happening. And this universe covers it. I mean, Civil War talked about it, and there's some interesting stuff there. But you really kind of, like, he has the weight of all of his people, not just the Avengers or his friends. Like, he really feels that. And you can see it in the way that Boseman does this character. And he doesn't even really talk that much. But just the way that he moves, the way he carries himself is he's just fantastic.
So I guess the last thing to ask is, Jake, you said this film was you think this may be the best film that you've seen in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Do you stand by that? And Trevor, where do you think this ranks on your film?
You know, I mean, I definitely think I need to watch it again to make that decision. But I will say that I think in terms of cast, performances, issues that it tackles, the uniqueness of the film, like, absolutely. I think that this has more to say than any other Marvel movie. I think this has a better cast than maybe any Marvel movie. And honestly, like, the Avengers and, like, big get-together films, I don't really include those in that because when you have an Avengers films, you have like some of the greatest actors of all time interacting on screen. And so those kind of like are a separate thing in my opinion. I don't know, that maybe just be me, but like this is at the level of those films for me as of now. We will see.
Yeah. If I was going to, I mean, I would throw it up there with Spider-Man Homecoming, which I love. Civil War, which I think is a really interesting film in a lot of ways. Winter Soldier also kind of tackles some real life, real world issues. And then the first Avengers is kind of that like gold standard, fun superhero blockbuster movie. Mm-hmm. Black Panther is not that, but it's great in its own right. So I would, those are kind of my top few Marvel movies, but I would put this, I mean, first, second, third, something like that, probably.
Yeah, this is top three, definitely top five, maybe top three for me, maybe number one.
Yeah, it's definitely up there for me as well. I mean, I love the original Iron Man. I think that's just such a perfect film. I have no qualms in saying that I think that film is perfect in a lot of ways. Spider-Man Homecoming, I love. It was in my top 10 of last year. Avengers and Civil War, you guys have already talked about how great they are. But, you know, I think this film definitely is somewhere probably in that top five. And it's an incredible piece of filmmaking. I think often we take for granted Marvel films, because I think so often they're good. And we just kind of throw it out as like, oh, it's a superhero Marvel film. That's good. But I mean, this movie is great in a lot of ways. And I think it's not, I'm happy that it's getting the recognition that it deserves because of the cultural impact, but it's amazing for a whole nother lens of, this film is actually a very good movie if you take out the cultural impact of it all, which is just
the other thing. Is what else makes this great is, I think almost more than any other, maybe the first Iron Man because of when it happened, but this film stands alone and doesn't need the universe whatsoever.
Right. Like, this could be a Black Panther film, no ties to Tony Stark, Captain America, anything, and it's still a great movie.
Hmm. Yeah. I agree.
So let's go ahead and get to our ratings of Black Panther. Jake, what do you give this film?
You know, this film has a few technical issues that I talked about, and I need to sit on it a little longer before I'm willing to throw out like an A+ or whatever. But this is definitely an A for me. I mean, this is so fun, so important, has so much to say, does so much to change the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I just can't wait. I want more Black Panther. So yeah, an A for me.
Yeah, just one more time, I want to mention the production design and its impending Oscar nomination.
It deserves one for sure.
This is just what the beauty and the color and the texture. This is a masterpiece of production design. I'm going to give this, 4.5 out of 5 Tribes of Wakanda. So right there in that A range, definitely. I could see myself maybe giving it an A+ if I, after watching it a couple more times, it could maybe get up into that range. I think it's in the conversation for best superhero film, of any. And I think that Wakanda may have a lot of involvement in Infinity War, if our trailers are any indication, and I'm pretty excited about that if that's the case.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. This film's an A for me. There's a lot of really great parts to this film. Something I didn't mention was, like, one of my frustrations with this film is that the marketing gives away the fact that Michael B. Jordan ends up taking on a Black Panther suit of his own.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
All right, Trevor. We
success.
There is a proof right there. And a lot of times when a Marvel film does that, if I sit on it and wait until it comes out on DVD and then watch it again, like that kind of happened with Winter Soldier. There are a couple things with Winter Soldier that I like were spoiled in the trailers. And then when I remember seeing the movie, I was like in the theaters and I was like, that was fun. And then when I watched it again at home, I was like, that's amazing. And I have a feeling I'll feel that way about this movie as well. But it's a great film. The cast is incredible.
Wait, time out. Since you mentioned Winter Soldier, we have to talk about the Bucky Barnes thing.
Ooh.
Were you guys wondering, why don't they wake up Bucky Barnes and get him to help in this fight? Did that cross your mind at all?
No.
No, I kind of forgot that they had him.
Okay, I forgot until like the third act, and I was like, wait a second, they have the Winter Soldier. He's like sleeping in a cryo tube somewhere in this country.
Because in my head, Killmonger is such a smart villain that he would know the sequence of words to say. Like, they'd bring Bucky out, and all of a sudden he'd be like,
"That's what if
balloon if, homecoming."
If you make this, if you make this movie two parts, that definitely happens.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, I mean, for that's, sure. Yeah, I would.
I liked that they did address it with the post credit scene, because I think you can't just leave it alone completely.
Well, because I think like they've already showed him in the Infinity War trailer, and so you've kind of got to
Right.
Gotta do something. So Kevin Feige came out today and said that he wants Ryan Coogler to come back for the next Black Panther film, and I would 100% endorse that. I hope that he's good with that. At the same time, if
back
Coogler,
up the truck.
Yeah, if Coogler name decides to do something else, I'm fully excited about that as well. It would be the first time that Ryan Coogler has made a film without Michael B. Jordan, which is sad to think. But at the same
flashbacks.
Time, if there ever was a film where I was okay with them bringing somebody back from the dead, it's this film. And I'm like, look, bring Michael Jordan back from the dead. I don't care what it takes. Do some Wakanda technology. Let's have him in the film. But yeah, this film's a good film. Way to go, Marvel. And excited to see where this series of Marvel films go. But that is all for our first review of a film that came out in 2018. This is our first 2018 film, guys.
Whoa. That feels weird.
Yeah. Halfway through
studios,
the month of February.
Put out better films in January.
Amen.
Hey, normally there's that really good war film that everybody wants to see, but this year it was 1517 to Paris.
Oh my God.
Which I've heard from people who like that kind of film was bad.
Yes. I've heard from people that the heroes in that film are the actual heroes from the events, and I've heard the acting is terrible.
Yeah.
My aunts told me that it was like watching two bad actors on vacation for an hour and a half.
I feel so bad for those guys. Like, they are American heroes, and like, good for Clint Eastwood for wanting to give them the spotlight and pay them a bunch of money. But good Lord, man. Like, you know this is going to be bad. Why do you do this? Ugh.
Yeah. Well, that's all we have for that, but let's go ahead and get into our content of the week. Jake, what is your content of the week?
Yeah, I have two things. One is check out the Black Panther soundtrack. It was made by Ryan Coogler and Kendrick Lamar, and y'all, it is awesome. Like, I feel like they should have just used the soundtrack as the score, because it is amazing.
I think there was only like one song from the actual soundtrack in the movie.
I was so disappointed. I was waiting for because I'd listened to it the week before, and I was like, oh man, that track right there would be so, oh, and nope, violins. Why are there violins playing right now? But yeah, check that out. And then I watched a film this past weekend that came out this past year, and honestly, I think if I saw it earlier, it might have been on my top 10 list of 2017, and that is Kong Skull Island. This movie, I was expecting like it to be okay. It is amazing, and probably some of the best cinematography of the year. Like, I still haven't seen Mudbound, but it is fantastic. Like, could have been nominated for best cinematography. So yeah, check that out. I watched it on HBO. But I think you can rent it on Amazon or maybe even just stream it if you have Prime. But yeah, Kong Skull Island is really good. And I would say that the monster universe or whatever has the second best cinematic universe out there right now with Kong Skull Island and Godzilla. Because we all know it ain't DC. So.
What about the Mission Impossible cinematic universe?
Or the Star Wars cinematic universe?
See, here's the thing, though, is the monster one is like 2 for 2. They're batting 100 right now.
Star Wars, just 6 for 9.
Yeah.
You guys, shut your mouth.
So, yeah.
What George but Lucas was six. Able to do with the Phantom Menace is impeccable. Well, Trevor, what
I'm,
is your
I'm leaving that silence in there for sure.
I mean, Darth Maul has definitely sold the most merchandise of a character that said less than 20 words.
Trevor, what is your content of the week?
Okay, so first, both comic-related. Check out the Black Panther comics if you want. There's some stuff that's really good in there. Fun fact, Black Panther is married to Storm of the X-Men in the comic universe.
Whoa.
Unfortunately, that can't work here because Marvel sold the X-Men rights 30 years ago.
Oh, just wait till we get him back.
Yeah, maybe so. That's why we keep getting mediocre X-Men movies, is because they can't get them back from... Who has them? 20th Century Fox? I don't remember. Anyway, that's some interesting stuff. There's kind of an origin story there. It's a short little collection called Storm by Eric Jerome Dickey. My other one is another graphic novel that's going to be kind of on topic, and it's a Marvel Universe event, and it's X-Men versus Avengers, or maybe it's Avengers versus X-Men, written by a few different authors. It's a 12 episode series, 12 issues. There's a collected edition. As I've said before, your local library is a great place to check out graphic novels because they're kind of expensive for the amount of time that you spend reading them.
Yeah.
But this is a great story, a really interesting story that digs into kind of what the X-Men are, what they're about, and kind of what the Avengers are, what they're about, and kind of the intersection of those things. So if you like that comic book kind of feel, go actually read some comic books because they're mostly pretty good.
Yeah, nice. My recommend, I have two this week. One is Dirty Money on Netflix. It's a documentary series that came out, I think, a couple weeks ago. I think there's six mini documentaries in there, about an hour each, and tackling things from the pharmacy industry to short-term loans, and it is, I think I've watched like four of the six episodes so far. There's the one I'm about to start watching is on the HSBC bank, and man, it is just fascinating to watch this and see the corruptness.
Makes you mad, doesn't it?
Yeah. But on the lighter note,
I can't watch stuff like that. It drives me insane.
Yeah. It's okay, never mind. I'm going to move on to my next one. The next one is THR, The Hollywood Reporter, puts out a series of roundtables every year that are incredible. There's a director's one with people like Guillermo del Toro and Greta Gerwig. There's a writer's one. There's an actor's one. There's an actress's one. And it's pretty much just like the top people in the field from that year in that category talking about that for an hour. And it's they're really informative. Definitely something that if you have some time, just check out. You could even put them on, kind of just go to YouTube, search The Hollywood Reporter, and you can find their roundtables and put them on as you drive. Don't watch them as you drive, but just kind of put them on in the background. And they're definitely fascinating to listen to, just some of the top people in the industry talk about their craft. But that's all we have for this week on Popcorn Optional. If you've liked listening to us tonight, go to iTunes, give us a review, give us a rating, let us know what you think, and share us with a friend. Let them know that after you see a movie, hey, go listen to this podcast. It's a fun way to just continue the dialogue after the film's done. We've loved talking with you guys tonight, though, but if you've wanted to talk more with us, you can go to Twitter and find us at Popcorn Optional, on Facebook at Popcorn Optional. We also have a website at popcornoptional.com where you can find all of our episodes and more information about us. My name is Cameron Salina. You can find me online at 321-CAMI-TIME. Jake, where can we find you online?
You can find me at jakebrown.tv. That's my website and my Instagram. Trevor?
I'm on Instagram at TurboTrevor and Twitter at TurboTrevor. If you want some more comic book or graphic novel recommends, hit me up on there and I'd be happy to share.
Awesome. Well, we have loved talking to you guys. We hope you guys have a great weekend. To quote the great Michael Scott, we will be back ASAP as possible.
Bye.
Later.